Chapter 13, Breaking Away. The burden of caring for Rose and the children while doing a full day's work, plus overtime, began to tell on Joe, and it became obvious to those working with him that something troubled him deeply. Most of the men hesitated to ask him about it, but one day Kimo, a young man working under Joe, asked, "Joe, what's wrong?" Like a man releasing a flood, Joe's silence broke, and the words spilled out. Kimo listened sympathetically, then exclaimed incredulously, "Nobody can help her? Not even the doctors?" Joe told of the many physicians and kahunas who had all failed to help Rose. "Well, you know," Kimo said, "I have a friend, Mr. Manapuli. Maybe he can help you. He uses the Bible. If you let him come to your house, I will bring him myself." A spark of hope began to kindle, yet Joe felt grave reservations. He knew the power of his spirits and didn't want harm to come to anyone. But after discussing the matter at length, Joe finally agreed to talk with Mr. Manapuli and let him decide whether he thought he could help Rose. After work that evening, the phone rang. Kimo told Joe that after explaining things to his friend, Mr. Manapuli felt that he would like to talk with Joe and Rose. Perhaps he would be able to help. Joe debated within himself about telling Rose. Her depression, although still with her at times, had lessened with the passing of time, and she was attempting to live with her problems as cheerfully as possible. Kimo told Joe that the Manapulis lived only a few blocks away, so Joe finally agreed to let Kimo bring them to his house where they could talk. Then Joe told Rose that they would have company soon. He explained about Kimo, Mr. Manapuli, and how he used the Bible. Rose eagerly agreed to try once more. When the Manapulis arrived, Kimo didn't come with them, so the Manapulis introduced themselves. Mr. Manapuli carried a Bible, and after all were seated, he told Joe about what he believed, about his power, and about how he worked. Joe listened intently, and his mind reeled. This man carried a Bible and even read from it, yet claimed to be a kahuna. Most kahunas carried the Bible, but they didn't read from it. Could that make a difference? Mr. Manapuli sounded very certain that he could help Rose, and Joe wanted help for her more than anything. Still, he felt a grave concern for Mr. Manapuli. When Mr. Manapuli finished telling Joe what he believed and how he worked, Joe began talking. He told the Manapulis what he believed and stressed in detail the power of his spirits. Then he said, "I'll tell you what, friend. This is my belief. This is how I grew up. I say that if your power is not strong enough, you won't overcome the power I have. My power I know, your power I don't know. You say your God is stronger than mine. As far as I'm concerned, that's only words. If your power is not strong enough to overcome my power, something bad may happen. I don't want to cause anything bad to happen to you." Mr. Manapuli insisted that he wasn't afraid, and under those conditions, Joe's concern was eased. Joe remembered the time Lahapa had told him to build the altar. Her message came to his mind, "One day you, my servant Joe, will understand the words from this book." Now Mr. Manapuli carried a Bible and claimed not to be afraid. He repeated, "If my God isn't stronger than your God, then I will leave you alone. But my God is strong. I know my God." He sounded so sure that Joe decided to let him try. Certainly they needed help. Rose needed help. But he knew it would be a battle between gods to find out which was more powerful. After Joe gave his consent, the first thing Mr. Manapouli said was, "All these things must go." These words astonished Joe, and he asked, "What things?" "All these must go. The lamps, the cushions, all this must burn." As he spoke, he pointed to the various items and named them. Without a second thought, Joe responded, "Okay, burn it, but where?" "Outside in the backyard. Tomorrow. I'll come after work. We'll do it then." The following day, Joe mechanically went through the motions of his work as his mind wandered. Never could he remember living for any length of time in a home with no spirits. In his heart, he felt that his spirits wouldn't take kindly to what was planned for them. That evening after work, the Manapoulis returned. Mr. Manapouli and Joe took all the spirit furnishings out of the parlor and heaped them into a pile in the yard. As they carried the beautiful table altar out, Mr. Manapouli said, "I have good news for you." That sounded encouraging. "What's the good news?" Joe asked. "Your wife is going to be healed." Joe's heart beat a little faster. Joy filled him. "Well," he said, "everything is here. What do we burn?" Mr. Manapouli began to point first to one piece, then another, saying, "This, this, and this." Just before Joe put a match to the pile of spirit furnishings, Mr. Manapouli pointed to the table, altar, and lamp, said, "That table and that lamp I will take home with me. You keep the Bible." Joe struck the match, lighted the pile, and knelt with Mr. Manapouli and prayed as the fire burned and the flames rose higher and higher. When the Manapoulis left, they took the table and lamp with them. Rose seemed to feel some better, even walked around a little, and they began to hope once again that this time she would really be healed. Joe and Rose talked a long time concerning the events of the evening before they went to sleep that night. It seemed a very short time until the phone rang. Joe groped in the total darkness for a light. It was 1 o'clock in the morning. When he answered the persistent ringing, he recognized Mr. Manapouli's voice sounding a bit strained. "Joe?" "Yes." "Joe, you remember the table I brought home?" "Yes, what about it?" "That table is walking all over my living room." He explained that wherever he put it, the next time he looked, it would be in a different place. He hadn't seen it move, but something moved it. He knew he hadn't. As they talked, Joe could hear the strange growing panic in the man's voice. Joe asked what he thought was happening, and Mr. Manapouli said that he didn't know, but he thought that something was very wrong with that table. "Well," Joe responded, "if you don't want that table, bring it back." "No, that table must be burned." "Well, burn it." Joe wanted to get back to sleep, but the voice continued, "No, you must burn it." "Okay, bring it back and I'll burn it. You want to bring it back now?" Mr. Manapouli hesitated. "Well, I don't know," and his voice trailed off. Finally, Joe said, "I have to go to work in the morning. If you want me to come for the table, I'll come and pick it up now." That suited Mr. Manapouli just fine. Joe arrived at his house within minutes and returned the table and lamp to his home, leaving them in the parlor. He needed to get some sleep before going to work and wasted no time in getting back to bed. Before he left for work the next morning, the phone rang again. It was Mr. Manapouli. "Where's the table?" "Right in the parlor where I left it." "That is unusual." Mr. Manapouli's voice sounded strange. He repeated the story of the night before. He finished by saying, "I don't know what's wrong." "Do you still think you can help Rose?" Joe questioned. "Yes, I think I can." Joe's original concern came back, even stronger than before. And he told Mr. Manapouli again, "If you can't help Rose, leave us alone. By doing that, you won't get into trouble." Mr. Manapouli's insistence that he could help worried Joe. All day he thought about the strange happenings of the night before. When he got in from work that evening, he built another fire in his backyard and burned the table and lamp. But Rose seemed no better. Only the little improvement she felt after the first prayer, but no more. Mr. Manapouli returned to their home repeatedly for 9 months, praying for Rose and doing all he knew to move his spirits into helping her, but to no avail. At the end of that time, he moved his family out to the Wayanay area and quit coming. Although Joe commended him for his persistence, he secretly felt that they made the move to save face over their inability to help Rose. His worst fears were realized when he heard that Mr. Manapouli had collapsed and died without warning, just 1 year from the day they first met. Rose could get around a little now, and one day, sometime after Mr. Manapouli's death, they went to a fish market on King's Street to do some shopping. While they were there, Mrs. Manapouli came in. Joe went over to speak with her and offer his condolences. But when she recognized him, she turned on him and shouted, "You killed my husband! It was because of you he died!" Joe tried to get her off to the side to talk. "This isn't the place for us to talk," he told her. "If you want to talk, come to my place or let me go to yours." "No," she again screamed. "You killed my husband." Embarrassed, he took her by the hand and led her some distance away, where he reminded her, "You were there when we were first introduced. You heard me tell your husband that if his power was not stronger than mine, then to leave me alone. I said that anything could happen. That's the way I believe. But you said, and your husband said, that your power was stronger than mine, so I had nothing to do with his death." When they returned home, Joe visited Kimo. Joe told him of the encounter with Mrs. Manapouli in the fish market and asked Kimo how he felt about the death of Mr. Manapouli. Before giving the youth time to answer, Joe continued, "When you first told me about this fellow, I told you to tell him that if his power was not stronger than mine, that there could be trouble." Kimo admitted that he remembered, but then he added, "But I didn't expect anything like that." When the table kept moving about in Mr. Manapouli's parlor, he told me then, "This man has a very strong power, but even he didn't know how strong." This tragedy haunted Joe, and he feared trying to get help from any other kahunas, not wanting a repeat of what had happened to Mr. Manapouli. Rose carried on as well as she could, and her pleasant personality and cheery smile seldom betrayed the suffering she bore. But her condition remained basically the same. Medication for pain gave her partial relief and enabled her to be on her feet short periods of time, and that seemed to be her future. A year passed. Joe continued putting in many hours of overtime and didn't get to see as much of his family as he would have liked. Newer and more effective medications gave Rose additional relief, making it possible for her to get around more than before. She drove the car on occasion and could keep up with most of the housework. The younger children started school and life settled into a more normal routine. One evening when Joe came in from work, the phone rang. Joe answered and heard a woman's voice. "Your name, Joe?" "Yes, who is this?" Joe's voice showed his weariness after a long, hard day. "Oh, my name's Evangeline. I heard you need help. Well, you heard right. Although each attempt to find help had only added to the list of disappointments, Joe still refused to give up. Evangeline continued, I can help you. If you can, let's talk. In this way, Joe became acquainted with an independent church, basically composed of Hawaiian people with a scattering of other nationalities. All of their friends knew of Rose's incapacitating disease. One of Joe's brothers, who wished to remain anonymous, had alerted these people to Rose's grave need. Can I come see you? Asked the voice on the telephone. Sure, my door's open. Evangeline arrived, accompanied by more than a dozen others. Joe took one look and thought an army was invading his home. His surprise didn't end there. As she told Joe and Rose of their church affiliation, Evangeline radiated confidence in the Lord she loved and served. It unnerved Joe when he realized that he had invited a group of church-going people to his home. It also frightened him. He felt compelled to tell them the way he and Rose believed, and of the spirit still living in their home, even though all the furnishings originally placed in the parlor for them had been burned. He expressed his concern for their well-being should they make an attempt to heal Rose, and the spirits should decide to take their revenge on them as they had on Mr. Manapouli. They visited briefly, assuring Joe that they had no fear of the spirits. Evangeline revealed to them a God of love, much stronger than any spirits, and expressed confidence that her God could heal. Joe gave his permission for these people to try, and then to his amazement they turned their entire attention to Rose. They explained about the God they worshipped. He loves everyone. It pains him to see anyone suffer. Each opened his Bible as Evangeline announced that they would read from Matthew chapter 5. She read from verses 1, 2, and 3. And seeing the multitudes, he went up into a mountain. And when he was set, his disciples came unto him, and he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. They discussed these texts, emphasizing the first beatitude, explaining the meaning and urging Rose to let the Lord fill her heart with his love, so that he could exercise his healing power over her. After a special prayer with Rose, the group bade them both good night and promised to return the following night. At first, Joe sat there stunned. Always before, anyone seeking to help Rose had gone through him. To be so totally ignored almost angered him. Yet as he listened to the reading of the Bible, it touched his heart. He again remembered the message from Lahapa. Someday you will understand the words of this book. It all began to make sense. These people returned night after night, each night reading and explaining a new beatitude, and always ending their visit with a simple but sincere prayer for Rose's recovery. The evening came when they completed the last of the beatitudes. Whether they planned to end on a Saturday night or not, Joe never knew, but at the close of the special prayer for healing, Evangeline invited Rose to attend church services with them the following morning. Joe knew Rose well enough to know that she would never go anywhere like that without him. And while he felt that, other than giving him polite greetings, they ignored him, he listened intently. He heard her respond, No, I don't think so. You know, he heard himself speaking up, I'll go tomorrow. Where? Rose asked. His former attitude had led her to believe that he would never consider attending any church. To church? What church? Their church. It embarrassed him to realize that he didn't even know the name of their church. But Rose knew and asked, The Lanakaila Church? I don't know its name, but it's their church. Rose appeared pleased, turned to the group and said, Then you'll see us in church tomorrow. From that day on, both Joe and Rose regularly attended the Lanakaila Church. Although Joe didn't anticipate it, the trouble he had predicted for others for meddling with his spirits, he now felt the spirits were directing towards him. Before the spirits left his home, they put up a real struggle. Joe was their target. One day, as he worked on a scaffolding 35 feet up, scraping the side of a ship in preparation for painting, he felt a push and plunged over the side. Fortunately, the safety equipment caught him, and he didn't sustain injury, but it served to make him more cautious. The area where he worked used much heavy equipment, some on the ground, but much of it overhead. On several occasions, some of this equipment, weighing up to 30 pounds, fell, narrowly missing Joe. God's hand and the safety equipment protected him. Each time a near accident occurred, Joe heard a voice say, Pray. Driving home one evening, tired after a hard day's work, he felt something push his car. Not forward in the direction he had been driving, but sideways into the ditch. Sending another prayer to God, he steered the car back onto the road and continued home. Things like this happened repeatedly, yet the Lord held his protecting hand over Joe. Joe felt the Lord's presence and for the first time realized that God's power was indeed stronger than that of those spirits who had held him in their grip for so many years. They didn't end their harassment until Joe finally decided to follow Jesus all the way, as the Lanakaila Church believed. Many changes occurred in the lives of both Joe and Rose before they decided to be baptized by sprinkling into this church. The Mokehanas, always helpful to them, waited until all the other spirits left before they also departed. Joe's puzzlement over their continuing with him after he had returned the stones following his mother's death was solved one day when Rose found their blue kerchief clothes in Joe's coat pocket. Knowing his mother as he did, Joe realized that when he had refused the Mokehanas on his wedding day, Hattie had tucked the kerchief into his pocket, knowing that they would remain with him as long as he had it. By the time Rose had found it, they didn't bother to take it back to Hattie. After their baptism into the Lanakaila Church, the blue kerchief mysteriously disappeared from the coat pocket and was never seen again. With it, the Mokehanas also left Joe and Rose never to return. Joe and Rose continued their correspondence with Lahapa while studying with the Lanakaila people. But the deeper they became involved with the beliefs of this church, the fewer letters passed between them. Following their baptism, the letters ceased completely. After so many years, Joe and Rose broke all ties with the spirits and followed Jesus.